Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyond Ananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the darkened corridors of power, and we also shine a light on the path ahead of us to where evolution is leading. The purpose of our Wiki Politiki radio podcast is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together to address problems rather than defend positions. We have another purpose as well, and that is to provide context at a time when the content can be contradictory, confusing, and overwhelming. Today we look at the context of community. In our book, Spontaneous Evolution, Bruce Lipton and I suggest that every phase of evolution involves greater awareness and greater connection. We've gone, in the history of life on this planet, we've gone from single-cell organisms to simple multi-cell organisms to huge, complex communities of cells like ourselves, consisting of more than 30 trillion cellular citizens. And as we see a burgeoning human population and an obsolete system of distributing resources, the connection we call community seems more important than ever before. Those who are looking to create a more loving, connected world talk about community all the time. Our guests today, Bill Kalth and Zoe Alawan, have been living and practicing community for years and bridging the ideal and the real deal. Bill and Zoe are co-creators of the committed non-residential community they call Tribe. Together, they've delivered more than 65 seminars around the world and co-authored the book, We Need Each Other. In 1984, Bill co-founded the New Warrior Training Adventure as part of the Mankind Project, and We Need More Kind Men, which has initiated 80,000 men into healthy masculinity all around the world. Bill is the author of A Circle of Men, published by St. Martin's Press, and now has the emeritus role of visionary at large with the Mankind Project, and he sees the profound need for human reconnection. Zoe has lived in community and been deeply engaged in sacred art for decades as painter, dancer, songstress, and storyteller. Her work in women's circles reclaims beauty and wisdom. She facilitates with humor, co-honoring the divine feminine and divine masculine. Welcome, Bill, and welcome, Zoe.
Well, thank you. We're excited to be here.
Okay, good. I'm glad you're here. And I love that title, We Need Each Other. We Need Each Other. That's so true. Tell us, how did this book project come about, and how did the two of you connect to begin this endeavor? Either one can start. Bill?
Okay, I'll jump in. We met at Burning Man back in 05 and fell in love and got married, blah, blah, blah. And turns out both of us have been deeply interested in community for years. And I have a kind of a fascination with new thought leaders, or they're being called. And I found Charles Eisenstein back in 08, brought him here to Ashland in 09, and Zoe and I, you know, co-led an event called Seeding the Gift Culture, because he's all about transforming the culture. Anyway, one of his major theses is we need each other, and it was just like so obvious, and it was like the obvious name for a book in this time of profound, you know, alienation and disconnection.
Zoe?
Well, he made such a case for the commodification of everything, and of course, we all see this, how you can buy anything. There's a price, you name it, you can buy it, but you can't buy me love. You can't buy love. And it's also the culture that we are in is been bombarding us increasingly with advertisement that bombards the brain with comparison, with this separation, which is contributing to this massive upswelling of isolation. And those two things combined us to be inspired to go, hey, let's talk about how we need each other. Let's bring back the reciprocity and exchange that was very natural in older communities. And that's our passion. It's basically creating this healthy cell. I love the way you talk about cells. And it's an emerging new culture. So that's what we're about and the passion that we have between us.
You know, you mentioned this isolation, and, you know, we've heard the term for 50 years, we've heard the term counterculture. And when you recognize that the culture is so much about acquisition and the individual, and there's, you know, again, it's wonderful that we're looking at our fulfillment as individuals. I think that's really important to have that sense of completeness and independence. And yet, we have a world calling out for this connection as we've moved from a front porch society to a backyard society.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you begin to put this all together you've done seminars and you've worked with people to help help them create community where they are. Tell us more about how that is unfolded.
Well, Bill, you've been a pioneer.
Yeah, through the Mankind Project, I traveled a lot, and I what I saw was that the need for community is just profound. So I'm a kind of a social inventor, so I figured, what the heck, I can do this. And Zoe was in alignment, and we said, like, how hard can it be to build community? Let's take it on. Honestly, we have found it to be one of the hardest things I've ever done. It's challenging, but we have actually done it. Unlike a lot of, you know, my favorite authors, including Charles Eisenstein, they all say community is like your book too, like it's incredibly important, but nobody talks about how to do it. And the reason they don't is because it's simply so challenging. And there's a brand new book just out this year called Lost Connections by a guy named Johann Hari, and that's his entire thesis. He was depressed and started taking antidepressants and found out that they didn't work and started doing studies, research all over the world, and found out that depression and anxiety mostly have to do with the lack of community, the profound disconnection, the alienation. So Zoe and I are actually doing something about it.
Go ahead, Zoe.
I think, Steve, there's also this piece that we didn't mention that, you know, Bill did so much work with developing this healthy, emotional men who can do battle, the warrior, doing battle with their inner demons or their inner places where they've been shut down by the society. And I also did a lot of work around healing my father wound, healing the father wound, and healing the mother wound. And this is the work of a man named Gordon Clay. And for a long time, we felt, well, women need to just be by themselves to feel safe and connected and explore the depth of that. And men also feel, having gone through this work and explored it, a certain kind of safety with just men. And it came to us that it's time now to bring conscious men and women together who can hold the honor and respect for the masculine and the feminine and this whole fluid balance of who we are as we're emerging. And that became a very important foundation of our work, is we knew how to bring men and women together.
You know,
yeah, if I was to honor the usefulness of what you just said about how we've become these incredibly sophisticated individual identity ego structures, that actually was an evolutionary process which we've kind of taken to the max, and now it's time to begin bringing them back together in some new form of a tribe. You know, we actually call our work new tribe. We can't go back to the old way of tribe because we've evolved so far. So the new tribe is coming together. That's our work.
Now, as you've done this work, it must seem obvious from what you said that there needs to be a certain level of individual self-development before people can take on, particularly coming from this society, can take on being part of a community where all of a sudden you're caring about people outside of your immediate circle. Say something about that. Or does there have to be a – what are the prerequisites for being in this community?
You know, there's actually a fairly sophisticated answer to that, which is that we have millions and millions of us have done enough inner work. You know, the whole phenomenon of psychotherapy didn't used to exist in our parents' day by and large. And all of the growth work that, like, literally hundreds of millions of us have done has prepped us for something brand new. And in our tribe, we are bringing people together not to be of service to other people. That's more of a bridging phenomenon. We are focusing just on us. And in so doing, we grow at the level where it becomes like there's nothing left to do but give, to be of service. And so service projects emerge. I've watched this with the Mankind Project integration groups, the follow-up men support groups. The men come in, and they often will spend 2 or 3 years doing their own inner work, not being of service, but their own inner work with each other. And they get to a point where their lives are working, and they suddenly find themselves drawn to service in some form.
That's really that's kind of like the put the oxygen mask over your own face first before you assist the children around you. And I think that's really very mature because, again, people who are idealistic and probably a lot of the people who are attracted to this new tribe and who are attracted to Mankind Project and so on are people who want to who see themselves in the context of the world. Certainly Charles Eisenstein puts that out. And so what you've discovered is that people really need to do the inner work first. So Zoe, say more about that.
Well, that comes down to what makes these kind of new non-residential. I mean, we live in our own homes, which is kind of a radical thing to be saying. We can create a tribe while still living in our own homes. But these kind of communities is there has to be some structure and some agreements and some process that we take people through to make sure it's a good fit for everybody. And one of the first things is evaluating whether there's somebody or the group as a whole can say, that person would be well-placed here. It would be a good place for them. It would be good for us. It would be good for them. And there might be somebody that is a marvelous person, but they would not be happy in this kind of intimate container for a variety of reasons, so that they couldn't say, I'm willing to champion that person into the tribe, or I'm going to sponsor that person. So we do have some structures to create a place where there is a meeting of people who have the capacity for the kind of intimacy and conflict resolution and all the different processes that we bring between men and women and those of gender fluidity together. So it's a kind of a marvelous and unique group of people we're bringing together. But there are so many people out there, so many cultural creatives, we used to call them, who are ready for this kind of work, but that we see the possibility magnifying right now. There's just much more interest in it in the last 5 years, and the last couple of years especially.
You know, one of the reasons why, you know, having been involved in communal living, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, one of the reasons why a lot of those projects failed is because there was no sense of authority coming from anywhere, and everybody was at the mercy of the least developed individual who could, you know, with childish behavior, could stop and slow the growth of everything. And we saw this happen several years ago with the Occupy movement, where they became preoccupied with taking care of homeless people, which is a great idea, and including people who didn't have the capacity to take care of themselves in the process of building a community, apparently didn't work. Is that what you've discovered?
Yeah. I mean, it's...
That is so painfully what we've discovered, is that we tried for years. I tried for years to build community by bringing a group together and then saying, okay, we're all together, we're equals, let's build something. Never works. What we discovered actually that works is an old thing called hierarchy, which sounds like scary to people that want to include everybody. And the truth is, it's just a tool. So we actually use hierarchy. We seek out people who are you know, capable of holding some power and authority, just what you just talked about, and capable of making choices about who is appropriate for a given tribe, capable of doing the training and the values and the structure of the tribe, until it matures enough, so to speak, as a body, that they can de-roll the leaders, because the leaders have let it know, the founders, let it be known right up front that when this tribe is mature enough, we will be de-rolled and just be part of the tribe as peers. But that's it's a very contrary to the, you know, to the hippie movement, as you suggested, Swami.
What you call
it. We're doing it, and it works.
The green meme.
Oh. Good. We'll be back after this break with Bill Kauth, Zoe Alawan, talking about We Need Each Other and Community. Steve Behrman, Wiki Politiki.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day. People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything. I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Steve Behrman. I'm back with my guests, Bill Kauth and Zoe Alawan, talking about community and about We Need Each Other. Interestingly, I'm remembering it has to be maybe 8 or 10 years ago. I attended an event in Ashland, Oregon, where you two live, and it was a community circle, and it was a potluck dinner, and everybody labeled the ingredients and everything that was in there so everybody knew who made the food and what was in it. And then there was a circle, and we sat in the circle, and the circle had to do with offerings and needs. I'm offering this, I need that. And it was so interesting to see how this very, very, very practical aspect of community, of needs and gifts, were handled. Could you talk a little bit, either Bill or Zoe, or you can talk at the same time, how that developed and your experience with the practical aspects of community?
Well, this was just shortly after we did the Seeding the Gift Culture seminar that we brought Charles in for. And the people, of course, as people are often after a workshop, they want to get together, they want to keep continuing. And we were having a reunion, a gathering of the people that were there. And Alpha Lowe, one of the people that had been there, called up and said, "Hey, after that workshop at the seminar with Charles, I've got this new idea. It's a gift circle, and I'm doing it in San Francisco." And immediately we started to practice that, and we started to create these gift circles. I think ours was the longest gift circle. It went for 5 or 6 years that we would meet once a month and hold space for people saying, what do they need and what do they have to offer? But truly the biggest stretch was saying to the other people what they need. Now, it could be computer work. It could be help with painting a bridge or a house or washing windows. But it became a marvelous container for stretching our capacity to ask and to learn how to receive. Really big gift came out of that.
Yeah, the other part of that really worked well with that gift circle was the fact that people would get together and work together on projects. They'd be sitting down working on a computer, you know, taking care of your neighbor's cat or doing a deck building project, and the guys get together. That was a great part of it. And you mentioned the check-in around the table. We do a lot of ceremony in our tribe and ritual. So just standing around the table before dinner and holding hands, and somebody does a poem or a little song or something, and then going around, each person says what they brought, allows them to feel the sense of blessing for this beautiful thing, this beautiful creation. For no money, again, getting back to the gift, that they're providing for the rest of the community.
You know, it sounds, once again, this is like a retraining of our, cultivating aspects of our humanity that have been dormant in this civilization. And even the practice of asking for what one needs, because again, there's been so much, I don't want to overuse the word shaming, but there's been a lot of shaming around not having and about having to ask and about not being able to do it yourself and so on. How has this, what have you found in that regard? Have people, as people become more able to ask, what have you noticed?
That they're more capable of showing up for each other. That they can be more, that they're more creative. There's a way in which we're showing up and we're growing up together, especially as we took that same aspect of asking for what we need and bringing it into the tribe work, that the new tribe. But in general, it's stretching that piece that we discovered as we took this around those 65 cities, which we talked about, where people would say, "I don't feel worthy. I could never accept the gifts that you talk about." And wow, we were just looking at this very big wound of unworthiness. And it's so foundational.
mending that, changing that as we grow together has enabled just such a different possibility of living. And just like, wow, there's far more abundance than I thought. And I'm part of that abundance. There's more than enough, as a friend, mutual friend of ours likes to say.
Yeah, as Timothy Nobles would say, yeah. There's more than enough.
Yeah.
So you've had that experience.
Absolutely.
Is this a multi-generational community? Have you been able to create it as multi-generational yet?
No, not at all. Ours is pretty much of a, you know, an emerging elders community. I think our baby is 53, and we've got one at 80, and the rest of us are kind of in our 70s and 60s. And in my experience over many, many, many years of doing community, that the more homogeneous, the better, even though we would like to have them mixed. So we right now are very actively fostering a community of young people with kids and trying to figure out a model that's going to work for them. And then once that little bunch is together and bonded and connected and committed, then they can interface with us like, you know, once a quarter. And at some point, our vision is to have maybe a half a dozen small clans, and together that it would come to 100 and some of our tribe meeting quarterly. So that's the kind of bonding that used to happen in villages, and it's gone. It's just gone, and we're creating it very deliberately and very consciously and visioning into that possibility.
You know, one of the events that – go ahead, Zoe.
Well, I just wanted to say, Steve, that I just wanted to make it known that we have helped grow other tribes in different areas. So we have all these sister tribes all around. There's one in Belgium that is thriving. We went to Belgium a couple of times and got them started. And then Bill and I have been doing coaching because we found that doing coaching on Zoom, wow, it was so effective for helping people who had been exposed to these ideas and to this feeling, this intimate and connected feeling of abundance and intimacy, that they needed help though to go through the actual steps of bringing a tribe together. So there's one in Northern California, there's one in Asheville, North Carolina, and there's tribes now that have come into fruition, and they have full members that they've brought. Our tribe is 20 people, and I don't think there's a tribe that's quite that large right now, 14, but in that general eight group numbers. And we just see the possibility to bring this to the many, many more people, which is why we're working on online courses now.
Are all of the communities that you're coaching, all the new tribes, are they all also non-residential? And just say something about why that was the choice.
That is a very, very significant detail. And it makes it so much easier. I think our friend Diana Leaf Christian used to kind of run Communities Magazine. She says that the failure rate is about 98% for people that want to put together an intentional community. And yet that is the vision. Let's live together. Let's buy some land. So when people come to us and say, oh, man, I know what you're talking about. I so want to buy some land and bring a bunch of people together and have a community. And I suggest to them as gently as I can, don't you think it would be a good idea to find the people and learn to know, love, and trust them, and then talk about land? And they all go, yeah, well, okay. So that's our thoughts about that.
Good. Bill, I want to ask you, I want to go set the Wayback Machine. I've known you for about 30 years. I think we met in Spring Green, Wisconsin at a sweat lodge, an event. And you had already started the New Warrior Training. How did that come about? How did the New Warrior Training and the Mankind Project come about?
Okay, long story real short. in the early 80s, I was a psychotherapist, and I had the eyes to see the kind of the social trends. And what I saw during that period was the powerful social evolutionary force was the women's movement. And they had something called a feminist therapist, and I loved what they were doing, so I identified as a feminist therapist. And I got invited to a conference of the Wisconsin Feminist Therapists Association, And there I was, out of 125, I was the only guy. And I was standing in the lobby one day at this conference, and I could see these other humans, all these women were so bonded and so connected and so interdependent, and something just rose up in me and said, damn it, somebody's got to do something for the men. And that finger pointing out kind of pointed back at me, and it was like a divine call coming in. And I tried to push it away, but it was in. So I was like obsessed for years, and I brought together a couple of my friends that I had seen emotionally. I'd seen their hearts. I'd seen their rage. I'd seen their love and caring. A guy named Ron Herring, who was a university professor in curriculum, and another guy who was named Rich Tosi, who worked with General Motors. And he'd also been a Marine for 10 years, but I had seen his heart, so I chose him. And the three of us hunkered down in 1984, and by January of 85, we had this training. We called the New Warrior Training Adventure, and we launched it out into the world. And because us men are actually really good creatures, and we just are hungry for a place where we can come and open our hearts and be real and authentic with each other. So we provided that place and a training that made that happen. And it has now spread all over the world, literally. Australia, New Zealand, and South Africa, and England, and France, and Germany, and Switzerland. And we're doing a couple hundred trainings a year, a couple thousand men, and just opening their hearts. That's what we're doing.
Yeah, and this has been going on for 30-something years. And what's great about it is that it's parallel, and it's been cultivating the sacred masculine, perhaps without you even considering that term originally. Meanwhile, back in the jungle, Zoe had been working over the years with her arts and the sacred feminine. So, Zoe, what about your background? How did this – I always am interested in how these things lead to our calling that calls to us. So – talk about your development.
Oh, well, my development involved studying art at Oberlin College and also looking for more meaningful art, always trying to find meaning in something and find the sacred. Very focused on, for years I was with the Boulder Mime Troupe, and I studied with Samuel Avital, and I not only learned mime, but I dipped into his understanding of Kabbalah and his Kabbalah classes. And from there, I ended up very involved with a school of artists who were very focused on sacred art and objective art, inspired by, some different influences of kind of a Sufi school, but working together as a community with all these people that were focused on art and living, and I lived residentially with them in a house of 14 people for many years, raised my children there. I just saw how possible it was to do amazing things, like create programs we took around Northern California to schools and offering these kids exposure to ancient Egyptian art and things that tied in with the curriculum, and then offering free classes for children in the community by pooling together resources of some 30 artists. So all of that just built up this love for community, and also this knowing that I wanted to be more engaged with others in the world in a different way. And so I went to Bali and spent some time. I started traveling because I had been traveling. And there I met somebody that introduced me to Gordon Clay, who did the healing the mother wound, healing the father wound. Mm-hmm. And I also just started to work with Shamali Ardow, beginning the Awakening Woman Project and doing deep work with women. And when I met Bill at Burning Man, it was because I went there because I wanted to see the art. I had no idea there were going to be 50,000 people there. I just went blindly with a brother, a new brother that had said, hey, I know you'd love this, let's go. And I dared to take a risk, and there I was introduced to Bill, and I think I was trying to sell him on a project, because I was a sculptor doing a lot of sculpture at the time. I was trying to sell, I had this vision of a sculpture for the Mankind Project, and I was trying to convince him that maybe his organization might want to buy this or something, but instead, we just got to talking about community and the possibility of bringing men and women together and creating community that would be kind of an extension of his vision of all the work with the Mankind Project, but with bringing in women and those with gender fluidity and creating, what would it take to create that? And I was so inspired by the Healing the Mother Wound, Father Wound work that then Bill went and finished that work himself. So that was the beginning foundation. And then I was on a retreat in Malta, and these amazing goddess Stonehenge kind of like 6,000-year-old temples there. And I was doing some breath work. And what came to me was this pounding, huge voice that said, you have work to do with Bill Kauf. So I followed up on that. And I guess the rest is history.
Got to listen to those voices, you know.
Oh, I could not listen to that one. Yeah.
Isn't it interesting when people find their calling and it ends up being as a couple, a couple with intention? We have a break coming up. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about community in these times, particularly as we're challenged by environmental issues, political issues, and so on. This is Steve Behrman, Wiki Politiki. I'm talking with Bill Kauf and Zoe Alawan about their book, We Need Each Other and the New Tribe. Back after this message.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network. Presenting transformative programs and events to help you awaken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the Wiki Politiki sponsors page.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Okay, Steve Behrman, I'm back with Bill Kauf and Zoe Alawan, and we're talking about community. And boy, this hour is really sped by. There's a number of unasked questions and so on. Bill, I wanted to talk to you about something you were involved with, and I'm not quite sure if this was before or after you and Zoe met. for a while you were involved in something called Lifeboats, and that was designed to help create a transition between our current economy and where we're going to need to go. You were ahead of your time, I believe. Can you say more about that and how that relates to your community's work right now?
Sure. My official title with Mankind Project is Visionary at Large, so basically I get to do what I want, and I tend to take it seriously. The visionary is one that goes ahead and finds out what's going on and brings it back to his people. So I started studying the state of the world and was just appalled at what was going on. The you know, peak oil was the obvious thing at the time, but, you know, we don't even have to talk about that. You know what's happening. I decided to take it on the road, and I called it the Lifeboats Tour. And I kind of went all across the country, you know, just kind of like Chicken Little, and realized at some point that people didn't really want to have to be shocked. They already basically knew that stuff. But what I noticed was that everywhere I went, and we do real simple kind of getting to know you connection exercises, and people loved it so much they wanted my roster every time. So I realized the need for community is just profound. Oh, my God. And that became a kind of a calling that led to the connection with Zoe and everything that we're talking about.
One of the things that you mentioned early on in the show is how difficult community really is. What have you found to be the biggest challenges, and what have been the greatest breakthroughs? So I'll let either of you start.
Yeah, I'll go with that one because I got a lot of passion around it. The biggest challenge is finding people that have what I call that sovereign leadership spark, the willingness. I actually mentioned this a little bit earlier. It's the willingness to take on that hierarchy, to actually be the leader, doing something that's not that hard. But the challenge is to be willing to stand in it and call yourself the leader, the founder, for long enough to get the tribe up and running. That has been the single biggest challenge.
So, even finding a word for it has been kind of interesting. Like when we're in France, we were talking about champions, and I like the word champion a lot better than any other word. They like that word champion. But when we were in Belgium, they didn't like the word champion at all. They liked the word king and queen. Who are going to be the king and queen, temporary king and queen to hold space? but regardless, that and having people agree to committing to a bioregion or committing to place, those have been the two biggest challenges. But I think of the two, it's Bill saying that, speaking this piece about, you know, in spiral dynamics, there's all these different worldviews, and each one has its gift. And there's a place where you step over from what they call first level to second level, where second tier, where you can see the gifts of all the others, all the other worldviews. And the gift of being able to hold leadership is so important, and be able to say, here are my values, here are the values that I want to offer, here's the structure that I want to offer, that I am offering. And I choose you. I ask you, do you agree with this? Do you want to come and be a part of this? That is enormously challenging for people to be so audacious. But when they do it,
it
works.
It saves years of messing around trying to figure it out with a group. The other thing that Zoe just mentioned that is so significant is place. The tribes that we're building are all face-to-face. We use the metaphor bicycle distance. They all live fairly close so that they can meet, you know, at least once a week with each other face to face. And we live in such a transient, mobile culture that for some folks that's just anathema. They can't even imagine not moving.
Yeah.
So it's the first question we ask when somebody talks to us about tribes: are you home? Are you home? Are you where you're going to stay? Because if you're not, tribe isn't going to happen for you. So.
Yeah, that's really important these days with the mobility, and yet. There is something about, Trudy and I have been living in the same town for the last almost 20 years, and there is something about knowing your way around and the people that you deal with every day, the merchants and the doctors and dentists and haircutters and all of those people, you know, they're not replaceable. You know, people are not replaceable. When you get to know individuals and interact with individuals, and magic happens out of that. Barriers get broken down when you're dealing with people who you've known over a long period of time. And, you know, that's a big issue. I want to get back to one thing that that you both mentioned to get clarity for my listeners. You talked about the mother wound and the father wound. Zoe, could you talk about the mother wound? And Bill, could you talk about the father wound, or vice versa?
I think we should do vice versa.
yeah, exactly. We've each observed the other side, right?
yeah.
Okay.
For me, this is just in this workshop that Gordon Clay created, and he's no longer leading these anymore. There was a group of men, and they went through this 3-4 day intensive on working on the father wound. And then they also, another group of men would do an intensive on who'd done the mother wound, would also do the mother wound. That would enable them to come and participate with women who had also done those certifications on their own of mother wound and father wound, to come together for a full week, 24/7, called Clearing the Air Between Men and Women. Or family reunion, it was once called. So when you grapple with whatever was your, you know, the injured part, some of your core wounding, that for me was very strong around my father, and he died very young, so I could really work it out with him as I matured. But it just being able to learn more about the masculine and also hold my father accountable, both were powerful for me. And it so much resolution, and it involves some vision quest that goes along with each one of these as well. But just standing in front of Gordon Clay while he's holding a picture of my father, a photograph I brought, was one of the most terrifying experiences in my life. I'm just sweating as I'm talking to that photograph. As I'm talking to that image that I respected so much and was so frightened of disappointing, and very healing to clear those, and also clear some of the dynamics that get entangled in our sexuality too, that are not healthy, that are rooted in those core wounding around those parental issues that we are grappling with. So that was powerful, and the coming back for the family reunion, or the healing the mother wound and father wounds culmination, which is the clearing the air, was spectacular. Although in the beginning, I really wanted to strangle the person who told me I should do this. It was so intense. But it gave us this community of people that we began to spend time with twice a year, who named for the first time, this group is my family of choice. And that kind of was what it was like. But we wanted that in Ashland, in our own hometown. We wanted that same situation. So we brought Gordon Clay, and I think Shauna Wilson was doing the mother wound at that time. We brought them to Ashland. Many people went through those trainings, several of whom are in our tribe. And it just established this foundation for connection without the sexual flirtation that many of us got caught up in and learned when we were like 12 or something, you know. We were able to build a different kind of trust. Sure.
That was
the advanced
course, the clearing the air. Was equal parts of men and women, and we had a promise not to have sex with anybody in that container ever, not like for 6 months. So it made it so safe that we could actually get past all of our adolescent acting out with the other sex, and we used that as part of our a deep part of the training that we do for our tribes to create this enormous safety between men and women. It's so unusual and so splendid and so important that we've done it that way.
No, I just want to clarify that I want to clarify there, Steve. It's not like we're saying you can't ever be sexual with anybody in this tribe. What we came up with, we evolved, is that if your relationship is changing and you are wanting to be with somebody else, or you're starting to have a sexual dynamic, to agree to bring it to the tribe.
Transparency is the word there.
Transparency. So we're not saying you can't ever, because that wasn't going to work for us. But it's still powerful.
Another thing that Zoe just said that was really important, which is that particular group in Northern California would meet once a quarter, and it was so intimate and so lovely, and we wanted that in Ashland. We wanted to have that every week, you know, that feeling when you go to a seminar or a workshop and everybody kind of falls in love with each other, and then you say goodbye and you never see those people again. We experience that joy and that falling in love transparency. And so what we set out was to create that for ourselves. And actually, we had our tribe right here last night here in our house, and we felt it again. We feel it every week at least once with our tribe, because we've established the tribe with skills and connection and trust and openness, not to mention the ceremony and ritual we do, that allows us to catalyze that in our life constantly, regularly, without having to go far away to some exotic seminar.
Now,
you know, Steve,
go ahead. I want to talk about couples, but go ahead.
Yeah. Let's go ahead. Let's talk about couples.
Well, I just wanted to, I imagine that there's probably couples who have joined as a couple. Do you ever have a situation where one member of a couple is part of the community and the other isn't? Have you had situations where couples change their relationship and break up during the course of being part of your community? And what's happened in that regard?
All of the above. We've had one couple decide that they were going to separate, and they brought it to the tribe. And they said, we have decided to separate. And some of us had a sense that things were rocky between them, but they brought it formally to the whole tribe and rather surprised us. And they wanted our blessing, and they wanted our support. And we immediately stepped into supporting each of them. I think the women gathered around the woman, the men gathered around the man, and it just helped them navigate this difficult transition with so much love and support that they are both still in our tribe.
So they both remain in the tribe.
They both remained in the tribe. Yeah.
Excellent. Mm-hmm.
And have had the support incredible support from the other members of the tribe, and they acknowledge that. Is that what made the difference so they could be friends, still be friends? They're amazing.
And to just answer the rest of your question, we have not found it happening where one part of a couple joins a tribe. Not impossible, but that just hasn't been our experience.
I wouldn't imagine that would be common. What I do hear from this conversation is that there is an incredibly rich area of love and support, connection, and depth and dimension to life that many, 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 many people are missing out on in the nuclear mm-hmm. family these days, most of which get nuked. And so here is a lot of nuclear families explode, and the fallout is unfortunate in many, many mm-hmm. ways. And so to be able to hold a couple who decide to change their relationship and separate, and be able to hold the two of them as part of the same community, really, really speaks to the connection and power that you've created. We just got a couple of minutes left. Anything you'd like to share in regards to plans for the future or ideas for people out there listening?
sure. We're intending. We've taken this whole year off. Actually, we haven't been traveling to recreate our work as an online course, so we can get it out far broader out into the world, so more people can benefit from it. And we're doing an Indiegogo fundraiser to be able to hire the people to help us put together that course and get it launched. So, yeah, if anybody's interested, it's timefortribe.com. Just, you know, get on our list, and we'll let you know when the course is ready.
And we'll post the link on the Om Times page as well and on the Wiki Politiki page, so people who listen to this will be able to click on there and hear it, find out more.
And we also have a Time for Tribe Facebook page for the first time. When everybody else is getting off of Facebook, we started to get off Facebook. But I just want to say that there's a big vision. Bill is a big visionary. And when he started out with his idea of the Mankind Project or the Wild Man Adventure, people didn't understand what he was talking about or the need for it. So I share Bill's vision. And I see 1,000 people sitting in new tribes, thousands around the world who are connected through their gift. And that's what we're doing, bringing us back to gift culture. It's like we ask each other, how are you the gift? And people know how to respond to that. They know how they're the gift. And they're bringing it into the world.
Thank you. Thank you, Zoe Alawan and Bill Kautz, for talking about community. And we need each other. This is Steve Behrman, Wiki Politiki. I'll be back next week. Till then, goodbye.